Hey everybody, welcome to the Slick Tree Podcast. I'm your host, Colby Langford. The point of this show is to help improve ourselves as dog men and to raise the quality of the dogs on the end of our lead. So let's settle in, turn the volume up, and let's see if we can't learn a trick or two together from our guests.
We lived over at old home place, which is down the road here about 2 miles, right for this little mountain. And we was poor folks when we lived over there, which I'm still poor, but I ain't hardly as poor as I was then. But lived over there until I was, I think I was 9 when we moved out from over there. We didn't have no electricity, no running water. I had to carry water from a spring. But we didn't really realize we was as poor as it was because we always had something to do and had a good time. And Dad had a, I guess probably one of the deals I remember about as much as anything is an old female dog that Daddy had. He called Old Belle, and she was an all-around dog. I mean, you could use her for everything. When we was kids, we squirrel hunted her, coon hunted her, possum hunted her at nighttime. And she would also, Dad is a back open range, and Dad had quite a few cattle and hogs running out, and he used her. You could saddle your horse, and you could holler Suey, and she'd go looking for hogs. You could holler hay, and she'd look for cattle, you know. Or you could, we squirrel hunted a lot, horseback. You could just take your 22 and get on a horse. And she just had a way of knowing that what she was hunting for. But they don't tell how much money that old dog made, Dad. You know, times was hard, and we didn't have no money much, but Dad raised pups, and the natural woods was right there, joined our place, big hardwood, pine, hardwood timber. And this old Belle, she'd take them pups out there, and she would train them. She'd take them out there hunting, and she'd train them, you know, tree squirrels. And there's an old man that lived with me in Arkansas. He run a blacksmith shop. He was a dog trader. And he'd come over, and he'd buy them dogs that old Jip had trained. And I had a pup one time that was supposed to have been mine, and he was out of that old Belle, and he was half walker. She was a cur dog, but he was half trained walker, and he was smart. He'd probably 8 or 10, 12 months. He might have been close to a year old. He was done training squirrels, and we used him on other stock, too, and everything, too. And well, while I was in school one day, Bill Peters come by, and Dad sold old Spurs. He was supposed to be my dog. That's what we named him, old Spurs. And that's what I named him. Anyway, Dad sold him for $50. Of course, back in the 60s, $50 was quite a bit of money in the early 60s. It was worth, you know, probably as much as, you know, 500 or more is now. But anyway, part of the time we had an old propane refrigerator, and a lot of times it wouldn't run, it'd get clogged up, but Mom always canned a lot of stuff. Fall of the year, Dad had a lot of hogs, we'd butcher 5 or 6 hogs, and he'd smoke them, and had one side he had a smokehouse, another side was a meat house. He'd smoke them, and he'd put them in that meat house to keep the meat. And he'd put what some of them might call it bran, but Daddy would call it shorts. It's made out of wheat. He'd put that shorts down, and he'd put a layer of shorts and a layer of meat and a layer of shorts and a layer of meat. And I asked him one time, I said, "What's that? What are you putting that them shorts in there for?" He said, That's to keep the skippers out of it." And I don't know what skippers is. Some kind of little bug gets in it. But it would keep to welling up my summer like that in them shorts, keep it covered on them shorts. It'd get tasting a little old, but we'd eat it because that was the only thing we had. And then Mom done lots of canning. She'd can stuff out there. We always had a big garden. And Dad had an old land house, a chicken house, oh, just and he always he'd keep about 100 hens, white leghorn hens. He'd order them, and he'd get them, they'd gather them eggs, and we'd take them over to Meenan's little old grocery store where it's called Weatherby's, and he would trade a case of them eggs for groceries, you know. And back in, if he spent $20 for groceries for a week, that's too much, you know. Now you couldn't hardly even get two items for $20. Mm-hmm. But we enjoyed it. We enjoyed living over there, and I think a lot of them old days, think about them old days and things that's happened and how things has changed in the last, you know, 50 years, 60 years, you know. I could be 60 plus, I guess, you know. Well, 60 and, about 60 years. More time gets away when you're having fun.
Mm-hmm. All right, everybody. I'm your host, Colby Langford, and you are listening to the Slick Tree Podcast. Today, I have got my good friend, Dale Toon, here with me. Dale, I appreciate you agreeing to do this interview and appreciate your time talking to us.
Glad to tell you what I know, which is not very much. But
Dale, what can you tell us about your operation you got going here?
Well, yeah, I got a little hunting ranch here 5 miles south of Smithville, right off the, well, like a crow flies, about 5 miles. You go down the road, it's about six, but south of Smithville, Oklahoma, down here in the beautiful Kiamishi Mountain Range. And I got a little hunting ranch. We hunt hogs and feral goats and rams, and got a few fallow deer, a few buffalo, not many buffalo. I'm trying to raise some buffalo. And I when I started out, opened up, I guess, 2001, we used to run lots of hogs in the mountains, and we'd catch them and we'd sell them to a guy that was taking them back east for hunting ranches, and the laws and got so strict, you couldn't cross state line with them. So I said, well, I'll just rig me up a deal to get rid of them, sell them, hunt them right here. And it's been good to us. It really has. It's been good to us.
Seems like you got a pretty good cattle operation around here.
I've had, I can't even remember when I didn't have cattle. You know, I've had cattle all my life. I got a cow-calf operation, and I'm one of the few that still gets to, you know, that tries to run a few outside on National Forest. I can run them from from April the 15th to October the 15th out on National Forest. And they've been pretty good to me. They do some control burning, and I got the fence where they can't go across the Mountain Fork River to keep them off the highway. And it's, so far they've been good to me. The National Forest has been good to me. Of course, I have to pay, but they don't charge me just a big lot. I can, you know, as high as land is and as hard as it is, cost so much to clear it, you know, it's pretty cheap what they charge me to run out.
Myself and friends and family of mine have been coming down here and hunting with you for a pretty good amount of time now. And anybody listening to this, I can vouch for how enjoyable of a time you can have here. The food is absolutely excellent. We just got done having a wonderful breakfast, and it's a really awesome place to come visit. This place is special.
Well, it ain't nothing fancy. Like I tell all my hunters, if you're looking for a 5-star motel, you better go somewhere else. But it is, we keep it good and clean. We got a bunkhouse, and we keep it good and clean. Wife cleans it up good and disinfects it after every group. And, you know, it'll keep you warm in the wintertime and pretty cool in the summertime, and good and dry, you know. And we do keep lots of hogs to hunt. Somebody said, what are you going to do? You get where you can't get hogs or can't get good hogs. I said, that's probably when I'll close my doors. That's when I'll shut down. But I've really been blessed with, you know, being able to keep enough hogs and good hogs. You know what? They're not all real big hogs. Some of them come. Some people come and want to just kill a, you know, a little 100-pounder, and that's fine too. We try to have something in there for everybody.
So I've heard you tell this story. Could you tell us about the first time you ate beef?
Ate beef?
Yep.
I guess the first time I probably ate a good beef burger was probably when I was in high school, either a freshman or a sophomore. I showed pigs back in them days. We'd moved out from the old home place over there, just down the road a mile and a half before we could have electricity. And we went to, I was showing pigs, and we'd go to Idabel to the fair in September. And I believe that was the first time I ever ate a good beef burger, you know, and I thought, man, this is a treat now, you know. You could take $2, you could buy a burger and a Coke and a drink for $2, you know. And I seen like a burger, no, I believe it was a Coke and a drink and fries for $2. Seemed like it was 50 cents for fries. But anyway, it was real cheap. But me and my dad, we used to go down there to Idabel sale in the fall of the year, and we'd sell. Dad had lots of cattle, but we didn't eat cattle. We didn't eat beef. Dad always said beef is to eat. I mean, beef is to sell and deer is to eat. We eat pork. We eat pork and deer meat and squirrels. We eat lots of squirrels. We ate a lot of squirrels too. But down at that old sale barn, the cafe was downstairs, and I was just a little fella. I was probably, I don't know, 7 or 8 years old, and I'd walk down through there, and I'd smell them burgers cooking on that grill. And, man, that smelled good. But me and Dad always stop at Broken Bow, get us some lunch meat and a honey bun and a quart of chocolate milk, and that's what we ate for dinner going down there. But I was off wondering on how them would taste cooked on a grill like that. And I guess I was either salt. I guess I might have been a freshman because I started showing pigs when I was, you know, freshman in school. Showed pigs down there.
You know, I've never asked, but what can you tell me about your family, like siblings and?
Well, I've got three sisters. I hadn't got no brothers. I'm the only boy. Grandpa come in here to Smithfield or Watson, little old town east of Smithfield, where ways, and then in this community that we live in is called Nanachito, and that means Big Hill in Indian. And Grandpa homesteaded our old home place over where I was telling you about, where I lived until I was 8 or 9 years old. Grandpa homesteaded it somewhere around statehood. They cleared it, that 40 acres, they cleared it with a cross-cut saw. Now, this is what my dad and my uncles was telling me. They cleared it with a cross-cut saw. Had big pine timber on it, and they had the pine sawed up enough to build their barns and their house and stuff. And that's the rest of it. They just piled it and burned it. You know, they just wanted to get it cleared so they'd plant corn. But Dad was like 18 months when they come in there, when they come in over. And that place is still in the family.
Yeah.
And here where I live, this place here, I bought, is an old ranch place. I bought it in 1986. And I've cleared it up and got it in pasture, and the backside's where I fixed my hunting ranch at. It's about, I got between 250 and 300 acres that we hunt back there. And I got a good double fence around it.
We were talking about this last night up at the cabin. You did a really good job on the size of the ranch, because if it was any bigger, I wouldn't want to walk across it as many times as we do. But if it was any smaller, I wouldn't like it either.
Well, if it's much bigger, you'd have trouble finding a wounded hog. You know, we still have trouble finding them, because it's all woods except part a little bit right along the fence line. You know, but it's open woods. It's fairly open in there. You know, the animals keeps it down, but it's rolling hills. You know, and I thought about, well, I should have made it a little bigger, but then you get thinking, well, if it's much bigger, You know, you can hunt 8 or 10, 12. I've had as many as 15 in there at one time. And if you kind of know where everybody's at, you got plenty of room, you know.
It's I like the diversity of it, too, as far as the different. You've got the piney woods, and you've got the pin oak flats, and it's just neat. You can kind of go through different sections and types of timber.
Yeah, hardwoods like the white oak and the post oak on some of the flats and up on the ridges. And, you know, you can come out of the piney woods and go right into the hardwoods, which is about all hardwoods, you know. And it's, or you can drop off and go south and hit marshy look kind of type stuff in pin oak flat, like I said, down in the pin oak flat. You know, this time of year, you better have rubber boots on and go through it.
So what all types of dogs did you've told me plenty of times before, and you mentioned running the cattle and the hogs in the wilderness area. Tell me about how you guys would get them rounded up and the type of dogs you'd use to do that.
Well, when I run out on National Forest, you know, I've got to have a I run most of my cattle's crossbred cattle. And you've got to have a dog. Well, we've always had dogs ever since I can remember. But you got to have a dog we call drive dogs. You know, most people think, well, drive dogs, they want to be behind. But them crossbred cattle, they don't. They need to be up front and be lead dogs, what we call lead dogs. Need to be something that'll not fight your cattle, but hold them up, keep them from running off, kind of keep them bunched. If one starts drifting off to the side, kind of help bring it back. And hold your cattle up where you can drive them, you know. And I've drove lots of cattle a long ways, just, you know, maybe two dogs and just myself. Of course, it's better if you got two or even three guys when you're driving a bunch of cattle. One ride drag and then two rides the sides, you know. But them dogs hold them up. They bay them, you know, they hold them up, keep them from running off. Them old crossbred cattle, you start driving them, especially for fat, you know, they'll start out in a walk, then be in a trot, the next thing will be in a lope, next thing they'll be running, they'll go, every, if you got 10, they'll go in 10 different directions. But that, and the dogs that I use mainly right now is a yellow black mouth cur. But I've had some good Callahoolies, leopard Callahoolies, and I've had some Brindles, you know, but the dogs that I've got, the bloodline I got now is a pretty old bloodline, and they're pretty good dogs, you know, pretty good type of dogs. And they'll work hogs or cattle, the dogs with them, y'all are dogs. And same way about the leopards. Some guys says they like the leopard Callahoolie better, and some of them says they like the yellow black mouth cur better. I've had both. And, you know, I've had good dogs in both breeds. I've had good leopard dogs, and I've had, you know, leopard Callahoolie, and I've had some good yaller dogs. I've had some yaller dogs that, you know, you could talk to like a person, you know, and seem like they understood you. And then I've had some leopard dogs that was the same way. You could talk to them and just like they knew what you're saying. So I don't know. I'm not partial to one breed more than the other. I like any dog that'll work, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't care if it's a poodle, I might use it if it works.
You mind telling us about your hand?
My left hand, yeah, it's I've got one finger half gone, another finger end of my little finger's gone, and side of my middle finger's gone, and I got a scar from my wrist all the way up, from up to between my thumb and my first finger. But I was over in them roughs in the mountains, and I rode my horse back in there. It's 2008, and it was in muzzleloading season, and I tied my horse up, and I'd got off of him and started just slipping around deer hunting, and I'd hunted all morning. Hadn't really seen anything to shoot. And I started coming down on this real steep point, went off to the creek, little old creek, and I seen where two bucks had fought. They'd really had that point tore up. So I thought, there's a couple of bucks right here. So I went off down to that little old spring-fed creek, laid down, got me a drink of water, got up and just walked out there about 20 yards, sat down on a log, just sitting there thinking how peaceful it was. Of course, I didn't know I was going to come pretty close to death. Sat there probably 20 minutes and then started up at bottom. It was about between 12 and 12:30. And this was in October, muzzleloading season. And I was just easing up at bottom real slow because leaves done got dry. And I looked, and here come a buck coming down that bottom. He was trailing, I guess, some more deer because he had his nose down, you know, like a dog would trail.
Yeah, dogging.
Yeah. So I just squatted down on my knees and put my left elbow right up on my left knee. Had that muzzleloader laying right in my palm of my hand. I pulled the trigger. That son of a gun blew up. And I thought it blew my nose off. I didn't know my hand's such bad shape. But it blew up and it broke my nose. I grabbed my nose and I could, you know, blood just pouring out of my nose. And with my right hand, I could tell it was still there. It hadn't blew it off. And I was about, probably 10 steps or 15 steps from that live spring branch. And I walked over and just took my right hand, started dipping up water, and got my nose stopped bleeding. I had a big, long mustache at that time, had blood and everything on it. And I looked down, my left hand looked like it had been run through a meat grinder. And I thought, I'm going to fool around and pass out, you know, and a bear will eat me because we got a few bear back in the mountains. Well, I put that hand down in that cold water and got my nose stopped bleeding a little bit. My hand got it stopped, and I had a knife on my belt. And I pulled my shirt tail out. I had a long tail shirt, pretty heavy camouflage shirt, and I pulled it out and finally got that knife out of my scabbard. And I cut the tail of that shirt tail off, held it with my teeth, and cut a chunk of that shirt tail off. And I put it in that cold water and wrapped it around my hand that was boogered up so bad. Then I held it above my heart, and I was a quarter of a mile from my old horse. And I finally made it to him, and I thought, I don't know where he's going to let me on or not, because I had blood all over me. But, you know, he didn't hardly even move, and I finally managed to take my right hand and finally pull myself on him and got on him. And I was, but I don't know, a good 2.5, between 2.5 and 3 miles, I don't want to exaggerate, but at least 2.5 miles from camp. And I finally rode into camp, and I stayed in Tallahassee Hospital for 4 days. You know, they took me over. But I kept telling myself, if you don't want to pass out, you know, but a man can do a lot if you have to.
Mm-hmm.
You can do a lot if you have to.
So what is your favorite thing to hunt?
Probably hogs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved to hunt hogs. And then deer, you know. I really like deer hunt, you know. When deer season rolls around, if I ain't careful, I'll lose a crop. I don't know when I go out in the morning, I don't know when to come in, you know. And I loved to hunt, especially if I know where there's a good buck or two, and trying to get around where I can outsmart him, you know. But I love to hunt hogs too, you know. I just like to hunt, you know, in the mountains. I like to be in the mountains, you know. And I don't have to, like a deer, if I can have a good hunt, if I just see some good, you know, see a deer too, even if I don't kill him, if I get to see some deer, you know, and almost kill him, you know,
mm-hmm.
just makes you want to go out much more the next day.
What's your vision for the ranch in the future, Dale?
Well, I think it's, you know, I think people's having more trouble finding a place to hunt, you know, and it's got so high to try to lease and everything. I think as long as we, you know, the main thing is to treat people like you want to be treated. Treat people right, you know. Don't give somebody a screwing just for an extra dollar. I'd rather for somebody to leave here owing me. It's overcharging or charging too much. And I got a grandson, my oldest grandson. He's really good with people. And my oldest son. But I'm probably going to turn when I get through it, I'm probably going to turn the hunting ranch over to my grandkids. And Lane will be the oldest one. He'll be over it.
Yeah.
And he gets along great with people. He enjoys it. He just kind of like I am. He can lose a crop when it comes to hunting. Of course, his number one is turkey hunting. He does turkey hunting, but he's a good deer hunter. He's a good hunter, period, any kind of hunter, you know. But he really likes to turkey hunt, you know. Of course, he likes deer hunt, but he likes to hog hunt. And he likes to bear hunt. He does it all,
mm-hmm.
you know. He can coyote hunt, I mean, anything. But I think he probably likes turkey hunt better than he does anything.
Yeah. You guys do a little rodeoing too, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't much anymore, but Lane ropes and his dad ropes and my younger son from my first marriage, he's got four kids. And that little girl, his oldest girl, Savannah Toon, she's won the youth of the junior barrels in Vegas the last 2 years. She's done real good out there. She won it year before last. She won again this past year. And Lindell, he team ropes, and he really liked, you know. And then the little boy, he's 16. He does a lot of her skinning here at the range now, and he ropes. They've all won. The girls won more saddle than the boys. They've all won saddles. And then their wife, Lindell's wife, she runs barrels. They got a pasture full of horses. But there's six of them, and you take six of them, and everybody has two horses apiece. That's 12 horses right mm-hmm. there, not counting the rood mares, you know. But yeah, but they don't. Now Royce, the little boy, the oldest boy, he likes to hunt. He likes to. You know, he likes to run hogs with his dogs, and he likes to deer hunt, but he likes to team rope too. But the other boy, their dad, Lindell, he don't care nothing about hog hunting or hunting. But now his brother, Liddell, my oldest son, he's about like me and Lane. That's Lane's dad. He likes to hunt. He really likes to hog hunt and hunt, you know, and deer hunt. He's a good deer hunter. Liddell's a real good deer yeah. hunter.
Lane used to ride quite a bit of rough stock, didn't he?
Yeah, Lane went to Cheyenne. He went to Cheyenne 1 year. We went out there and watched him. He went there to PBR, you know what I mean, pro rodeos. And he had a bad car wreck and liked to kill him. He was really blessed. It didn't kill him. He was T-boned. And he messed up his leg real bad, and he tried it after that, and he just couldn't hardly do it. It hurt him so bad. But he was good. Lane was good. He rode bareback horses too. But if he'd worked as hard right towards riding bareback horses as he did bulls, he could have, you know, which he went somewhere. I mean, on bareback, but finally he plumb quit riding bareback. Just rode bulls, you know. But he liked riding bulls better than he did bareback. I was the other way around. When I rode years and years ago, I rode bareback horses and team rope. You know,
what are some of the big changes you've seen just as far as in this country?
Roads everywhere, people everywhere. Timber company come in here and cut everything off, got rid of all the good hardwood. You know, I mean, I know it brought lots of jobs and stuff in here, but still, if it had slick cut it. You know, we'd still been better off, you know, and like the old timber company used to. And they're just roads and cabins, people coming in, building cabins everywhere, lands. A lot of places, you didn't think it'd ever be a cabin or nothing there. There's cabins there now. And the big change was when, that's two things really changed McCurtain County. One of them was when they built that 259 highway. Of course, it's a good highway, you know, and it helped people getting from going to town and stuff. But that brought people in too. And then the Broken Bow Lake, when they put the Broken Bow Lake in, it really brought, you know, which I guess, I mean, it made it's a big change, but I guess, you know, to a point, it helped the economy and everything, but it really made lots of changes. And then when Weyerhaeuser Timber Company come in, you know, they changed their way of of harvesting the timber and stuff, you know, and that was a big change to our country. But of course, I'm sure that it brought lots of jobs. But you asked me about the biggest change, and mm-hmm. that's right there, the three biggest changes, you know. And but we survived with it, you know. I mean, there's lots of people, you know, made a good living out of them, out of different things. But everybody can't log, and everybody can't grow timber. You know, I mean, everybody can't log, and everybody can't grow cattle, you know. It takes a little bit of this and a little bit of that to make everything work.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got any other good stories about growing up around here?
I could tell you a bunch of them, but we'd be here all day, so I know. No, I've been real fortunate to live in the place, you know, where I got to do a whole lot about what I wanted to do, you know, like hunt, fish, and ride the mountains, and what I really enjoyed doing, you know. And of course, like I say, there's been lots of changes, but we've survived at it, you know. And lots of things that could have happened, you know. I mean, everybody has had close calls when you was a kid growing up and stuff. Like one time Dad had an old 2-ton truck. He had a place over in the mountains he had a pasture he'd bought off of a guy, some farmland. We used to farm it, raising corn, and a coon got to eating the corn up so bad. He had the only corn patch around at that time, you know. And I mean, they'd eat it up, you know. And so he finally put it in pasture, and we was taking a load of cattle over, and that's before all these roads were built. And there's a steep hill over here not far from home. Dad had an old 2-ton truck, and it's an old truck. It had a wooden sideboards on it, and I don't know how many of them little poor yearlings he had in it, but he had it full. And there was a Choctaw Indian guy that helped Dad all the time, named Lee Jefferson. He was a good fella, good, you know, and he'd help Dad work. Of course, I mean, he'd work. Back then, you worked all day, and for $5, you made pretty good money, you know. And I was little. We was going up that steep hill and got about half, two-thirds of the way up it. The old truck pulled down. Dad's going to put it, you know, shift it up. You know, it pulled down. He missed the gear, and it run backwards with that load of cattle on it. And Daddy cut it. I mean, he was getting it up some speed, and Daddy kind of cut it. He cut it to the left. When he did, that old truck just laid over on the side of that hill. I never will forget it. I mean, it just flat, completely laid over. We was having to climb out the driver's door. And I never will forget it. First thing I seen, when I got out where I could see, I looked, and all them cattle was going down the road just as hard as they could run, you know. Anyway, Dad had to go get the county grader to set it back up for it. But, that, you know, it's one of deals like that we hadn't got hurt, you know. Yeah. But there's lots of things happen that, you know, that you wonder sometimes, how you survive, just like gun blowing up with me, you know. It could have been a lot worse.
We're sitting here in you guys' dining room and looking around. It don't look like you guys have any shortages of deer running around in these mountains.
No. No, we got a good many. We've, you know, good many. And, you know, which that's what I like to. I like, if I can find a good buck where a good buck's using that, I can't pull. I got a bad shoulder. I can't pull a compound, but I got a crossbow, and I'll hunt them in bow season and muzzle loading season and then gun season. So usually your bow season, your muzzle load season is probably your best season to keep big mm-hmm. bucks, you know. Now sometimes the rut will hit just right in gun season, but a lot of times it's too early, you know. I mean, the rut will done be about over time mm-hmm. gun season, the first rut. Now, a lot of times they'll have a late rut, you know.
Which Lane still catches quite a few hogs out of the mountain, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. don't forget about me just because I'm getting a little long.
Well, you mentioned this. Why don't you tell us about Dale, when's the last time you caught a hog?
About probably a month ago. Yeah. A month and a half ago.
Let's hear about it.
Oh, me and my buddy, I had a buddy over and we was riding and we got tracking. We got them Garmin tracking trackers going our dogs. Well, he had two dogs and I had a couple of dogs and had them. And we had tracking collars on them. Well, his collars quit working. And I don't know if it's his Garmin or what. But anyway, he'd lost his dog. So he went back to, he thought a lot of him dogs, which I don't blame him. I think a lot of my dogs, too. So I told him, said, me just having to double back what we'd done been. I said, I'm just going to go ahead and keep it riding, go right around this rim. And I'd seen where some big hogs been eating some hickory nuts, busting them hickory nuts. I said, I'm going to see if I can bay some hogs. I thought it smoked bars. Anyway, I was going around that rim, and I got a little half trend walker and half yaller blackmouth car jip. And she went to wind and kind of went off down this draw, and I got to looking down there. I thought, that looks like hog root. And I rode off down there, and sure enough, it was. And she went trailing him. And he'd been there. It had rained the night before. It almost rained it out, but she could still trail him. And she trailed down that little drawways and turned and went up in a little old deep canyon. All once I heard her barking. You know, she didn't sound like she was bad. It sounded like she was booger barking, like she was scared about something. So I started up there. And I got up there where I could see. There's a big old rock, probably, oh, I don't know, probably four foot tall. 3 foot. He's more than 3 foot. He's close to 4 foot tall. And there's a dead oak tree that fell down right alongside of it. And this old big boar, he wasn't too big, but he had an awful set of teeth, tushes. He was laying down between that rock and that log. And when I rode up there, he stood up, and of course, then she really went to band. I guess she could smell him and couldn't tell for sure where he's at. But anyway, make a long story short, I waddled him around there and drove him down there and finally got a rope on him, pitched a rope on him. And, yeah, I was pretty proud of myself because I usually have somebody to help me on them baddens like it, you know. But I drug him up here and went around the tree and left him dallied to my saddle horn. Got off running around there and got him by the leg and rolled him over and tied him up. But he was old. That old hog was old. His old tush was probably 3 inches long, big as your thumb. You know, he was that old. And he wasn't poor, but he wasn't real fat. He just in good living shape, you know. But I was glad to get him by myself. showed me, kind of got my confidence back up.
Yeah. Your dogs, are they mostly silent on track, or they run the track open?
No, most of them silent. Now the little red jip, she'll bark on trail if it's pretty hot. She'll give a mouth, but if it's pretty cold, and she wins a lot. She's half cur. The other day we was in that same area going along there. We started off this rough mountain going down a long point. Just all at once, I seen her throw her head up and just fell off in a big old canyon. Went way down towards the end of that canyon. Went to bay and got down there, and she had a blue boar bait, you know. But I like them to win. I like them to trail because you'll find a lot of them old layout hogs. You know, that's the same way about when we used to coon hunt. I used to coon hunt a lot years ago. I had a buddy that had an old dog, and I mean, he would, if he barked three times, he going to tree that coon somewhere. And one night he got trailing, and, you know, and never did the track, never did pick up. And once he went to Trin, and he's in a big old white oak. You had a hole in the bottom of it, and we chopped that hole out a little bigger and shined out up there. There's two big old boar coon, and what they'd done, they'd fed just about dark. And then this was like midnight then, and that trail was cold. They'd lay up, they fed before it got, you know, and fed just about dark, and then it went and dinned up. And that's kind of like them old hogs, you know what I mean? If you got a good trail dog on a hog, you find some of them old hogs to lay up, you know.
Tell me about the hunt style you like your hog dogs to have and just kind of your hunting style and the way you hunt them.
Well, the way I hunt, everybody don't hunt the same, I guess, but the way I hunt, I like to, of course, I go horseback, and I like, if you know, I like for a dog to, I don't like him follow right along behind my horse. I want him to be out, you know. But I do want him to check in with me every once in a while. You know, I don't like, I like that little red chip. She hunts pretty hard, but, you know, you might see her out there. If the woods open where you can, you might see her out there, you know, 100 yards or so, just, you know, working, just looking for the hogs, you know. But, if, of course, when they strike, when they hit a trail, I want to stay on it, if they will, you know, as long as they can smell it. But I do like one to check in with me every once in a while. I don't like one to just hit the woods and never check back with you because, I mean, you may be going one way and they may be going another, you know. Mm-hmm. But, and she will. She'll hunt. I might not see her for a good bit, and next thing you know, she'll show back up, you know. And if she don't show back, but she'll just make a pass by me to see for sure where I'm at and go on hunting, you know. But if I don't see her, then I got that reason I like a tracking system. I won't even turn my dogs loose anymore without that Garmin on, yep. You know. I've lost 2 or 3 good dogs in years gone by that, you know, that, but before I got the Garmin, you know.
How much catch do you like your dogs to have in them?
I don't want my bay dogs to catch. Now, I want one if I get on a bad hog and he's trying to run, I like to see him hit him in the back end, ham him, bite him in, down low in the ham.
Turn him
around, y'all. But when he turns around, I want him to go back to baying. You know, I don't want him to lock up on him. Usually, now I have had some good dogs in years gone by. I had a blue leopard dog one time. He'd stop one. And if that hog got to fighting him much, he'd catch that sucker by the ear. You know, but I'd had him cut all the pieces too. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to catch a hog, that's all right. And then I had another one time that I could go to hist him, just talking to him, go to hist him, and I could make him catch. He'd ham one, and I could go to hist him, and then I could make him catch, you know. But I'd rather, if they're not in a bad thicket where I can't get to him, I'd rather just keep him bait up tight and just ride up on my horse and pitch a rope on him.
Do you ever catch dogs?
Yeah. Yeah, my boys, I mean, Liddell, he and Lane's – Lane's had some good catch dogs. He got a good one killed the other day. A hog killed him. But if I, you know, I just don't have time to train them like that. And, of course, it'd be easier to train now with that Garmin than they would before we had it. But them tracking collars. But he can make him stay right with your horse, you know. And I've seen dogs. I've used dogs. I never owned one. Don't get me wrong. I never owned one that mind that good steady horse. But I had a buddy one time that had one, and he'd stay right with your horse. We've drove hogs, you know, with dogs. And it'd be big and fat. And that catch dog, you had to watch him because if him hogs ever charged your horse, he'd catch one if you didn't holler at him. But he'd follow right along your horse, you know. And if I had one like that, it'd be nice if you had one trained like that. And that one that Lane had the other day, he had him trained like that, but a hog killed him, you know. Usually a good catch dog, they don't live to be very old, you know. If you catch a lot of bad hogs with them, even though Lane keeps a vest on them, you know, to protect their lungs and stuff, but they can still hit them in the neck and throat and cut their throat, mm-hmm. You know.
Back when you were coon hunting, was there any certain type of dog that you'd hunt, or...?
A good dog we had was now, of course, back when I was a kid, we had that half cur, and I was telling about old Bill earlier. But as I got older, we had my cousin over here, he had some black and tans. But this boy that I hunted so much with, that good dog that we had, he was a blue tick, and he was a good dude, you know. But then that goes back to I've seen good blue ticks. I've seen good black and tans. I've seen good tree and walkers. Later years, guy had the blue tick. He got a walker, a tree and walker, and he was a good dog, you know, awful good dog. But it's kind of like what I was telling you about the cow dogs and the hog dogs. I've seen good ones in both breeds, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just what a guy likes, you know. It's kind of like a vehicle. Somebody likes, some people likes red and some people likes blue. I like blue on a vehicle better than I do red. That's kind of like the dogs, you know. But I wouldn't call any of them for what they, if they'd done worked right for the breed they was, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, you think any other good stories?
No, not right offhand. I could tell a good many stories, but I'd be rambling. I'd be talking about one thing, and the next thing I'd be telling a story about something else.
What about this river right here behind the house?
The Mountain Fork.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice river. There's some few walleye in it, and there's largemouth bass, Kentuckys, brownies. We got some brownies in it. They got these channel cat, blue cat, the flatheads, or Appaloosa, the flathead cats, and lots of old gar and just trash fish in it. You know, it feeds the Broken Bow Lake. If anybody's familiar with the Broken Bow Lake, Broken Bow Lake's a real beautiful lake. And it's a nice river, you know. And in the spring of the year, they do a lot of floats on it. You know, these people got canoes. And then down below the dam, I got a good friend of mine below the Broken Bow Dam. They canoe down. There's a bunch of canoe outfits down there, and it's a big, big deal in the summertime, that canoeing is down there.
Well, this is definitely some pretty country. I know I always enjoy it. I love coming down here.
Yeah. Well, I used to have a guy come here years ago, and I don't know what's happened to him. He was from up around Oklahoma City up in there, but he'd come down here and bow hunt, and I hadn't seen him now in 8 or 10 years. He always called this little Colorado. You know, he's the mountains and everything, just smaller, you know, not as tall, but he called it little Colorado, you know. But it is pretty country. You know, it is. All I know, I've lived here all my life. So only spot I know, I've thought about leaving a few times, but then I get thinking, if you get kind of tarred and burnt out, just go take your trip, be gone about 2 weeks and see how everything else is done in other places. You'll be ready to come home.
Mm-hmm.
You really realize what you got here, you know.
You guys are Choctaw, correct?
Yeah, Choctaw, yeah.
Well, Dale, I sure appreciate you doing this interview with me.
Oh, yeah, I'd be glad. I'm glad to share a little bit of my stories. I got one that kind of keeps popping up in my mind. I'll tell you if we got time.
Oh, yeah.
I had about 50 years ago, maybe a little over a week, me and my family put out some horses over in the mountains. Might have been a little over that. Well, we run cattle out for years on Weyhauser. We paid them to run, you know, to let us graze our cattle. And me and a buddy of mine was over on the edge of Arkansas. Now, this is the honest truth. It don't sound like it is, but I'm auctioneer part-time. I used to sell antler sale over there. And but, you know, a man can get more arms in the farm you can take care of. You let some of them burn, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I'd sold a horse sale over at Antlers on Friday night. And we come home, and a guy called me and said I had some cattle that got over on the edge of Arkansas over in the mountains. So we load our horses up in this trailer, me and my buddy. We go over and we go driving. And this was back in the 90s. We're driving them roads, and we got to send horse sign, see where this horse had come down the road. And I told my buddy, I said, I bet that's a stallion. Got just one horse by itself. And we'd probably come 2 miles and just seen them horse tracks coming down the road, you know. A little bit of come around a curve, and there went an orange gray stallion running down the middle of the road. And I'd speed up, and he'd speed up. It was just one of them mountain roads, you know. And it's piney plantations on both sides, a thicket. So thick a rabbit couldn't hardly get through it. But it had a pretty wide right-of-way. And I looked over at Carl, and I said, I can get you up there close enough that horse to rope him. He kind of chuckled, and he said, I kind of doubt it. Now, we're pulling a trailer, pulling two horses in it. It had dogs in it. And I said, well, over at that horse sale last night, and I said, that horse sale, I said, I bought a 45-foot nylon. He looked at me, his eyes got big as a saucer. Said, a 45-foot? And I said, yeah. He said, where's that? I said, it's behind the seat of my truck here. I was driving a red Dodge. So he reached back there and got that 45-foot. It's soft. It's a nylon, but it was soft nylon. So I slowed down just enough. He slung up, reached back, and got a hold of that headache rack. And he swung up on the back of my flatbed truck. And them roads in Arkansas come down through there, and then one spot there, they call it the H. There's a road in Arkansas runs Oklahoma runs parallel with it, and there's a little short road that ties them together. And I figured, I knew that stud was one of mine that come out of Oklahoma. And just before we got that H, I went to pushing that stud. Of course, like I say, it's so thick on the side he could. And I got up by him right at the H, right where it's wide place there, right at the H. I got by him, and I seen Carl throw that rope, and he had it tied off to the headache rack. And just as he threw it, I seen him go ducking. And I thought, he's got that sucker caught. And I started trying to shut that Dodge down. And I looked back in my mirror, and it looked like when you see a good calf rope, a calf rope rode a real good horse rope, a calf, and how they'll stand them on their end. Mm-hmm. That's the way that stud done. He come up nigher, his front end did, and he hit the ground. And then he got up, and he hit the ground again. And by then, he started choking. Well, I had to put it in reverse to back up, give him enough slack. And while he's about choked down, Carl made a halter out of that lariat rope was on his nose. And, of course, after giving him slack, and I would run around there, we'd throw the rope on his back feet and pull his feet up and tie it to his front feet, tied him like tying a calf. And we unloaded him two horses, and we drug him in that trailer and brought him home. And Carl broke him. But we dang sure did now. That was quite a deal. That's one of the – I never would have thought, you know, I mean – and Carl didn't think we could catch him, you know, but I thought, and I told him it was a 45-foot nylon. His eyes got big, and he said, 45-foot? I said, yeah. I said, where's that?
That was a good story, Dale.
Yeah, yeah. That was, we sure did, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there's a few of them old stories just kind of stick in your mind like that. You know, most people wouldn't believe that, but it's honest truth. That really happened, you know.
Well, we got time for more stories if you got.
Well, I could go on for ever, and probably someone would get bored to a lot of them.
They don't have to listen if they don't want to.
Well, you might get bored. No,
I'm not yet. So what about that time you guys took Lane hunting when he was real little?
Yeah, me and his dad, Liddell, and I don't know, Lane, he must not have been over 4 or 5. He was little. We didn't have our horses that day. We just hunted from the road. We baited this bunch of hogs, and they was a pretty good bunch of them. They had dogs was rattling. I mean, hogs was rattling, fighting the dogs. And so we took in, we told Lane's dad, set Lane up in a fork of a bush, big old bush, about like your arm, a little bigger. And he said, you stay there. Don't you get out. I said, there may be a bad boy in the bunch. You stay there. We're going to ease up there and see what's there. And then while we got up there pretty close, them hogs went to rally and come around, and the whole bunch come right under that tree where Lane, that little old bush Lane was sitting up in.
How old did you say you thought he was?
He must not have been over 3 or 4. He might have been 5, but he wasn't. I don't think he's no older than 5. He might not have been 5. You know, he was little, because that's the reason Liddell put him up in there, because he's up in that bush, because we're afraid something would charge us, you know, and we couldn't. And so he just stuck him up in that bush, and we eased on up there, and the hogs got to moving. They come right around, come right on that tree where Lane was at. I've had some. One time, me and a good friend of mine, he's dead and gone now, but he was an old man. We was over in the mountains. We just, the wind come up. That's before I got a tracking system, you know, track keep up with my dogs. And most time we wouldn't ride because I had a good fine dog at the time. She'd trail good trail. So we just going to do a little driving and seen some fresh sign put out on them because the wind was blowing. So we knew if they got very far from us, we couldn't hear them. Anyway, we come around up through there, and I seen where these hogs had rooted, you know, fed. I turned my dogs out, and they went up an old rough canyon, plumb up top this old big mountain bay, just before they went over on the north side. We was on the north side of the mountain. So me and this old man, his name was Leonard, we headed up through there. I grabbed my rope. We headed up through there, and it was pretty rough. That canyon was a long canyon going up there, and then it kind of headed out up there, and then you had to pull the mountain. Anyway, I was ahead of him quite a ways. I was ahead of Leonard quite a ways. And I got up there, and there was four or five sows, and I don't know, seemed like about a dozen pigs or shoats, and one big sandy-colored boar had bad teeth. And if I knew I went ahead and went on up the mountain like I was going north, going south, I thought they'll break and go over that mountain, and they'll go plumb off the south side. So I dropped way down, and I circled around them where they couldn't see me. And I went plumb around them and got on the south side. And when I topped up right at them. Sure enough, that sandy-colored boar, he seen me, and he broke and went right down that canyon. But I just took off. I was pretty young back then. I could run. I just took off running down through there. I had my rope, you know. And there's a bunch of blow-down timber in that canyon. He went through that blowdown timber, went plumb down to this big creek, and the dogs bait him right on this bigger live spring creek. Well, I got up there. When I got almost to him, he broke. And it's just a little old knoll ridge. I mean, wasn't really a ridge, a little hog, I call them hogback. Wasn't very tall, run parallel right with that creek. He's going right down the top. It's a game trail right down it. He's going right down that game trail. And every time I'd get up there, that hog would break. And I thought, I ain't going to catch that hog because by the time I get there close enough to try to rope him, he'll break. About the third time he broke, he wouldn't go far until he'd bay back up. So I just circled around him where he couldn't see me. And they got right on that game trail. And there was a sapling there about the size of a stovepipe. It had a fork in it up about head high. And I crawled up in that sapling, sat down in that fork. By that time, this old man, he had made it out to the, you know, out down there, and he hollered, "Dale!" Well, I wouldn't answer him because I was afraid that hog. I was wanting that hog to come on towards me, you know. And when he hollered, "Dale," first time, that hog trotted down that trail towards me, but still like probably 20, 30 yards being to me. I didn't say nothing. I just sat there real still. Had me a loop made. He goes, "Dale!" And that time he trod a little closer, but still was a little bit too far out to rope. And I didn't say nothing. Boy, he roared it out loud, just loud. He goes, "Dale!" When he did, that hog trotted right in under me. When he did, I just dropped my loop on him. And that hog almost pulled me out of that tree. I had my leg about half wrapped around one of them forks, but he's a big old hog. And I hollered, "Come on, come on, come on." He said, "Come on, where you at?" I said, "I'm down here in the tree. I got this hog rope." He couldn't believe it. That old hog had trotted right in under me, and I roped him out of that tree. And we finally, he got him by the leg, and I gave him a little slack, and I got down and hefted him. We finally got him down and tied him up. But that was quite a deal right there now. You know, catching him out, roping him out of a tree like it. Or I thought it was, you know.
So how do you normally get hogs out when you catch them like that?
Well, if you was close to a road, then we caught a deer about 4 or 5 years ago. I got a big old bay roan horse. I got another boy that I hunt with, a real good friend of mine. He lived just over on the edge of Arkansas. We was down here riding after some of my hogs, and we caught a big old boar. I mean, I believe if a hog, if he weighed a pound, I believe he probably weighed 300. He was big now. You know, a lot of them said, oh, I caught a 300-pound hog. When you look at him, he won't weigh about 200. But this hog was big. I mean, he was big. And he was mean. He cut, I had a young dog. He cut the collar, the muzzle plumb off that young dog, hung tusk in it, cut it plumb off of him. But he didn't get cut bad. But anyway, we got him caught a Dusty. A Dustin, he said, I had this old big horse. And it was, we were right on Buffalo Creek. And right there at the edge of it, we had to go up a hill. And it was just almost straight up, that hill was. I mean, it wasn't straight up, but I mean, it was steep. I mean, it was, you know. And then he said, how in the world are we going to get that hog out? And I thought there a little bit. And I said, I'll show you. We tied all 4 feet close we could tie him. He got it. He's got it on video, us dragging him out. And I tied a knot. Oh, it's old Roney, that old Bay Roan. He's a big old horse. He's fat. He'll weigh 1,300. And I tied a knot in his tail, and I took a nylon rope about the size of your little finger and put around his teeth and tied it in that around that knot. And I got on that horse, and I rode him right up that steep hill. A horse can pull a lot more from her tail than it can saddle horn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Is I drug him right out to the road, pulled him with that horse's tail.
Well, you got any more stories?
Well, not I can think of right now. I got a little boy 8 years old, and me and him start somewhere. He'll say, tell me a story, Daddy. I've been told one. I'll start telling him one. You done told me that one? I said, yeah. Well, tell it to me again.
How old are you, Dale?
I turned 70 in August.
Yeah. Well, you're aging well.
Yeah.
Aging well.
Yeah. Well, I've been blessed with being in pretty good health, you know. I'm thankful I can still do some of the things I like to do.
Well,
I enjoyed sharing with what little bit I know, which is not very much.
Wild Boar Ridge. I don't know if you mentioned that. That's the name of the hunting ranch.
Yes.
If someone wanted to try to get a hunt booked with you, how would they get a hold of you guys and try to make that happen?
We got a website. You can just punch in wildboarridge.com and get talk to my wife. She does the booking. The number is 580-306-7419. And it's on the website too. But I let her do the booking because if she tries to book and I try to book, you know, and we don't mix groups. If you got a group, we don't mix groups. And it's just better off let her handle the booking and stuff. And because when they call it, she'll have the paperwork and everything, the calendar right there. She can look at it. And we tried that one time. You know, both of us booking, and if you ain't careful, you'll overbook, not know it, yep. You know. So that's the best way to handle it that way, you know.
But,
yeah, if anybody wants to come, we'll treat you so many ways, you'll have to like some of them.
Well, Dale, once again, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
I appreciate you sitting down and agreeing to do this. All right, everybody, take care and keep wearing out that boot leather.
I just want to give everyone that's listening a sincere thank you. Getting this podcast going has been a project. I really hope you're enjoying it, and if you don't mind, give the show a good rating and review wherever you're listening to it at, or share it on your social media to help get some traction. I appreciate it, and I'm looking forward to your feedback.